Welcome back to the Matter of Facts podcast on the Prepper Broadcasting Network. We talk prepping, guns, and politics every week on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Go check out our content at mofpodcast.com on Facebook or Instagram. You can support us via Patreon or by checking out our affiliate partners. I'm your host, Phil Rabley, and my co-host, Andrew Bobo, is on the other side of the mic, and here's your show. Welcome back to Matter of Facts podcast. Phil and Andrew back behind the mic. Last episode, I got accused of not ranting as hard as everyone was expected, considering it was an entire episode about gun control. But I would like to point out, it is 2023, and Phil is turning over a new leaf.
New year, new me.
I am not choosing violence every day.
Every day.
I'm going to be calm. I'm going to be the calm one from now on. I'm going to be calm and sedate and rational. I'm not going to lose my shit all the time. I'm not going to scream and yell about ATF and alphabet agencies. I'm going to just zen.
Yeah.
Present the facts in a nice, balanced, non-psychotic way.
Yeah. What do you think about, was it Sheila Jackson? She's basically going against the whites.
I think that the statistic that like 15% of the population has an undiagnosed mental illness gets reaffirmed every time I hear a politician open their mouth. Like, I always knew there was a bunch of crazy people out in the world, and Sheila Jackson Lee is hardly the craziest one, but I digress.
Yeah, she introduces bill to combat white supremacy, and it's a criminal charges, so yeah, basically criminal charges for quote-unquote hate speech from basically if you're white. How do you feel about that?
I mean,
they're pretty much, she might as well just put the, she might as well just come out and say it that she, I mean, the KKK back in the day, you know, they had, the Democrats created the KKK for minorities, so she might as well just say, well, let's just do a new group, and, but then you think about it, you're like, wait, a new group, that's the ATF, FBI, NSA, so they have all that, but I digress.
Yeah, I mean, I would, if I were dealing with a rational person, which we're obviously not in this context, I would urge them to have a brief look through history and remember that every time you bequeath the state additional powers to determine what is and isn't wrong think or wrong speak, inevitably the political social pendulum swings back the opposite direction. And when that happens, my books just fell over. And whenever that happens, typically, the same power you bequeath the state gets used like a weapon against you. So I would just caution Sheila Jackson Lee and all the freaking idiots who are singing her praises and patting her on the back right now for going against white supremacy, that any time you give the state additional power, you are not always going to be in control of that power. It is literally like playing with matches in a house made of sticks. The same fire that can keep you warm can burn your house to the ground. So, you know, like, and this is the same conversation we have with these short-sighted morons a couple of years ago when they lowered the ceiling to confirm a Supreme Court justice from 60 down to 50 in the Senate, and they were warned very explicitly, y'all are going to rue the day y'all did this, because sooner or later, that power balance is going to shift just enough to screw y'all over. And it didn't take very long before that happened, and they were immediately crying foul over the fact that the rules that they changed enabled this. So all I would caution people of is, as a default position, if I sound like a bit of a closet anarchist when my default position is no, don't give the state more power than it already has, it's because I know enough history to know that usually ends badly.
How about this?
Not always. Maybe there's like this tiny little historical footnote somewhere in our or another nation's history where like giving the state unlimited power has worked out well, but I can't really think what it was at this moment in time. I mean, it certainly wasn't the Soviets, it wasn't the Bolsheviks, it wasn't the French Revolution, it wasn't...
Those are all good people.
During Napoleon's time, it wasn't when we were being tread under by King James.
So
Cuba? No, Cuba's a bad example.
So how about this? What do you think about the congresswoman from New York wanting to lower the voting age to 16? Because apparently kids are you know, smart enough at 16.
I think we should lower the voting age all the way down to 5 and put Mickey Mouse on the ballot. He's a shoo-in.
I'm trying to get you to break your resolution now.
Let's rip the Band-Aid off. Guys, I am content to play by whatever set of rules the adults in the room want to play by. If 14s are going to be adults, then 14-year-olds can be adults, and that's fine. But that means 14-year-olds can smoke cigarettes and drink booze and buy AR-15s and serve in the military, and they can sign contracts, which means they can take out student loans that nobody has to pay back except for them because they were adults when they signed for them. I am content to play by those rules if y'all want to play by them. But you cannot have 14-year-olds vote on the one hand, and 20-year-olds can't buy AR-15s, but 17-year-olds can serve in the frickin' military. You can't do this because it doesn't make any freaking sense. It is stupid. There's no principle involved. Now you got me slapping my microphone. There's no principle involved here. Like, I am willing to entertain whatever socioeconomical stratification of opinion y'all want to throw around, but you got to make it make sense, and it doesn't make sense. You cannot be an adult in one respect and not another at the same son of a bitch in time. It is not possible. Not possible. So, if 14-year-olds get to vote, then pay back your own freaking student loans and leave me alone about my freaking machine guns, because I'm 40 years old. I could buy whatever the hell I want. And that was the world's fastest New Year's resolution blown up by my co-host. Thank you much.
Hey, you know what? I figured I'd just
didn't even rehearse that one. You just, I said new year, new me, and you smelled blood in the water and started circling.
Challenge accepted.
Let's see how fast I can make Phil lose friends and alienate family members.
Hey, you know what? It's okay. All right, so now that that's over with, anybody who is a gun nerd or knows anything about firearms or whatever, they know about SHOT Show, which is the shooting outdoor trade show or something like that. Here I say that, and then I can't even remember what the heck the freaking acronym is. But
this show was not rehearsed or scripted, folks.
Yeah, right. But it's out in Vegas, and my goal is one of these years to. I'd like to get out there because I think it'd be fun. And I've been trying to research on how to go as media stuff like that. I'm excited. I'm always excited to see what new products get released. I'm always going through the YouTubes and the interwebs and trying to see, like, and scouring the pages of, like, some of my brands that I like to follow and stuff like that. I'm kind of excited this year. It looks like the whole night vision game is changing. There's a company, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but I follow them on Instagram, and they're changing the game up with nods like crazy right now. The price has not come down, unfortunately. But the way, like, with what they're doing, it's just crazy with some of the stuff I've seen them release. One of the things I've seen them release is, if anybody is familiar with the panel bridge system, basically you can take from Noise Fighters, you can take two PBS-14s, you can mount them on this, it's called the panel bridge, mount them on it, and you can actually... So you can go from a 40-degree field of view to, like, I believe it's 70-degree field of view, which that opens it up pretty good. And that's the thing is, like, when people think about dual tubes versus single tubes, in my experience, like, you have, I mean, dual tubes are great. I'm never going to knock them, but you basically keep the same field of view, whether you're single or dual with, like, PBS-15s and stuff like that. With the panel bridge, you're able to kind of like take them, and you can kind of like bend them out a little bit, so you can get your peripheral a little bit better. And this company's actually been working on like taking the dual tubes and making it and basically building a housing around it to where you can actually adjust them like that with standard nods and stuff. And they're coming out with, they're taking like the quad tube that you all are familiar with from the Bin Laden movie there, the Zero Dark 30. They're taking that. I think they, just for a heck of it, they posted it's like it's like four of them, and then they posted and they had a mount for like another four or something like that. So it's like eight or something. Like, it's freaking crazy. Like, some of the stuff they're coming out with, I'm like, so soon you're just gonna be able to like look everywhere. The technology for nods is crazy. They're coming out. I mean, with what we're seeing now, there's newer technology that we're not seeing. And some of the newer stuff now, it's just like looking out and during daylight. It's not white phosphorus. It's not green. It's just basically it's just color. And they're building that out. And I've been seeing some images of that coming, getting released. But no, it's a good trade show. It's interesting that it's just interesting that all of those guns in one place, and they don't hurt anybody though. Like, you would think that if guns were the problem, like, nobody would walk out of that building alive.
I'm pretty sure they strictly control ammo on the floor.
I know that. I'm just saying, it's just, if the guns were the issue.
Two things I wanted to throw into that conversation about nods. First of all, like, bear in mind, the original intent behind quote-unquote dual tubes was not a wider field of view because the two tubes are parallel with each other. The original intent was actually depth perception, because if anybody's ever had this experience, like, cover one eye and walk around, and you realize very fast that the whole reason why human beings have two eyes on the front of our skull offset away from each other, both pointed forwards, is peripheral vision. And that's with the two eyes have the ability to reference each other, and your brain does some crazy voodoo black magic and figures out what depth something is from you by the relationship between your two sight lines. So by having a tube in front of each eye, even without a broader field of view, your eyes can now do the same thing through night vision.
Right. Like, I'm definitely not gonna knock having duels. You can get duels, do it. My whole thing is like I have a PVS 14. When you're looking at getting started with night vision, a lot of people are wondering, like, I've heard the question, or I've been asked the question, should I save it for PBS 15s or just get a 14, or what should I do? And I mean, 15s are great. If you can get 15s, that's great. You're looking at a few thousand dollars more. But the 14, if you just want to get started, the 14 is great. You're getting the same 40-degree field of view that you would with 15s. It's nice with 15s because, you have both eyes covered, and it kind of helps your brain regulate and just understand what's going on more. So, I get it. I would really like to upgrade. I've been really trying to put some money away. I'm trying to save it for a truck, so all my money is going towards that right now, that and my house. My goal in the future is to upgrade the PBS 14 to like 15s or something like that. But I just think it's really cool that they're just kind of trying to push the boundaries and seeing what things can do you have to be in the military price to get it kind of thing.
Yeah. The one thing I'm definitely hoping from night vision is that I'm hoping as the technology continues to mature, and maybe demand starts to drop off a little bit, although I don't see that happening anytime soon. But my hope is that eventually those prices come down, like, to something that, I don't want to say the everyman couldn't afford, because, I mean, it's pretty affordable for what it is. Yeah. But when entry level two night vision is easily the case of the cost of like a mid-tier AR with optics on it and like a 10 pack of mags, like that gets to be a very difficult proposition for a person to just try to get into night vision, especially when you start thinking about the fact that, like, and you know this messing with night vision, but like once you get into night vision, just the tube, it doesn't completely get you off to the running, because now you need either an IR illuminator or an IR laser on your weapon. I mean, I don't know. It gets to be a pricey.
It's just like with everything, it adds up. And I mean, it's the rabbit hole. Like, do you need an IR illuminator or an IR light or a laser, stuff like that? No, you don't. You can shoot if you get like there's. It's nice, believe me, but it makes shooting a lot easier, but. Getting yourself a Scalarworks, like a 1.93 mount, that raises that, it raises your, the sight up high enough to where, I can look through my, I can look through my PBS 14 and look through my, my, hollow sun, my red dot, and I'm fine. And I also, the other thing too is with the PBS 14 that I like, is I do like that the fact that I can shoot, I shoot with both eyes open anyway, but when I'm shooting the rifle, I have my PBS 14 on my left eye, and I'll have the of course, and I'll have my optic on the right eye, and both eyes open, it's like the dot is actually, and then especially at night, you know, I mean, when pitch, like really pitch black, it superimposes that the picture together. So I don't know. I mean, there's pros and cons to both. If you can get 15s, get 15s. If, or it's something better, if you can get freaking 31s, or you can get the panel, or, you know, the quad tubes, then heck, do that. But, no, if you're just starting out, a 14 is definitely not bad, at all. But, there's a lot, but I mean, it's just interesting. Have you been seeing any of the updates from SHOT?
Honestly, this is the time of year where I avoid social media, because like my entire feed on everything is flooded with SHOT Show stuff. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like it gets to be a little bit overload for me, because like, while I love guns as much as the next person, I don't live, breathe, and die by them either. So
blasphemy.
I'm just calling it the way it is, brother. Like I have this conversation with everybody. 95% of my firearms are home defense firearms at the end of the day, which means they were purchased for a purpose. And I don't want to say that they're appliances, but like they are for a purpose. So yeah, there are very few like modern firearms that I lust after just because of what it is. Now, right, you get into a rabbit hole of like historical firearms or firearm design, things like that. I get it. I turn into a gun nerd really, really fast when we start tearing apart guns, looking at the different operating systems and how they work and how they're built and the similarities between this gun and that gun and how they differ, like from a mechanical aspect.
Yeah.
But no, I avoid SHOT Show coverage like the plague. I will probably resume most of my social media activities in a week or so once everybody's gotten all this out of their system. I've been watching lots of coffee roasting and coffee brewing videos lately.
Yeah. No, so we kind of, we were talking about it before we started recording. I mean, in 2023, just in general, not even from SHOT Show, but just in general, like, what are some things that you'd like to see from the gun community? I mean, it goes right off the title there. You know, what would you like to see more of? Or if you haven't seen it, what would you like to see?
A lot of things, honestly. Like, first of all, like if from an aspect of like firearms technology, you and I have had this conversation. Like, firearms technologically haven't changed much since like John Moses Browning was screwing them together 100 years ago. Like, and that's not to say that there have been a lot of improvements and a lot of movement in some ways, but there haven't been many what I call from like the business world disruptive changes, where some new piece of technology hits the board and changes the rules of how the game is played. You know what I'm saying? The one thing,
I mean, I would have thought we would have had lasers by now, but
yeah, you know, pulse rifles in a 40 watt range and all that. But like, in all honesty, the only thing that's come up recently that's really kind of interested me has honestly been the was it the 6.8x51 cartridge that the military is going to? Commercially called 277 Fury. Cartridge design-wise, it's kind of a known commodity. I mean, I think it's a 270 or a 280 caliber bullet that's known to be a very ballistically efficient cartridge, 6.8mm. The case it's based on roughly has plenty of powder volume and a short action to produce very respectable velocity, but it is the advent of the bimetallic case that has caught my eye. It is the stainless steel case head attached to the brass body, which is giving the brass body is giving the proper metallurgy and I guess the plasticity is probably the correct engineering term for it, but it's the, like, the whole reason why brass is such a common cartridge material is that when the powder is discharged, the brass swells in the chamber to make sure all the pressure goes forward. It doesn't try to come backwards through the action, unless bad things are happening. So brass works really well for that. Stainless steel, not so much. Stainless steel doesn't stretch much, but what stainless steel is really good for is holding a lot more pressure than what brass is capable of, because brass will turn into liquid and go places in people's guns it's not supposed to. Like, anybody that's ever seen a really, really massively overcharged round, when that goes off, it sprays molten brass all throughout the action of the firearm. It's very violent. So by having this brass cartridge with this stainless steel case head on it, they're pushing the chamber pressure up north of 80,000 PSI, which is enabling the powder volume they have to produce some very, very impressive velocities in 6.8 by 51, which I'm using that terminology to separate it from the commercially loaded 277 Fury, which is using an all-brass case. I'm interested in that. That's something that could be a disruptive change if it catches on, if more manufacturers push that technology into their cartridges. We could see, we could see pistol ammunition operating at higher pressures than they traditionally have. If the barrels are beefed up enough, we could see it could usher in, again, if the technology is adopted enough, if it becomes widespread, it could usher in a new wave of cartridges based on old cartridge designs, but with a newer technology and a higher pressure ceiling. Will it happen? I don't know. Like, we as a gun community, as a firearms design community, have gone down this road before of, like, pushing for super, super high pressures and super high velocities, and a lot of the time it wound up in the realm where barrel erosion, throat wear, and all kinds of other things were so hideous that the cartridges fell out of favor very quickly. Because, yeah, you could get this cartridge and push it like 25-30% faster than anything else out there in that class, mm-hmm. but you'd burn your barrel out in 150 rounds and people threw it in the trash. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's interesting to me that, like, somebody had to have taken a look at cartridge design and said, this is the limiting factor, and they found a way to beat it. And it's interesting. I would like to see that go someplace. I would like to see it get pushed. I'd like to see this idea of, instead of firearms manufacturing doing what it usually does, which is lots of small incremental changes, I would like to see them take a risk every now and then. Now, that's hard to say, though, because there's a lot of friggin' firearms out there that there's only a few thousand of them made, and the manufacturer died penniless because they tried to color outside the lines and it just didn't catch on. I mean, gun owners are not known for adopting right. strange, esoteric technologies.
Yeah, that is interesting, just because of the fact that you're introducing something new. It usually, like, it's almost like a new bandwagon, like the new hotness. Like, it comes out, it gets a hype, you'll see it, and then it kind of just peters out. You saw that with the 300 Blackout, which I still stand by the 300 Blackout as being one of the best rounds I've ever owned. And as suppressor-wise, you can't beat it. Being able to go back and forth from go from suppressed to unsuppressed, and you don't have to adjust anything on, like, 5.56. If you want to adjust 5.56 for gases and stuff like that, tune it, then you can't shoot unsuppressed. So yeah, it's interesting. I'm kind of curious to see where that round goes. I mean, since the military picked it up, I'm sure it'll go far, just like the 308 and everything. But
I mean, I will hold my breath. The fact that SIG has procured a military contract, that is going to inject cash into the process. That is going to get their manufacturing sped up. I'm sure that, you know, they have a very large contract to fulfill before any of that 6.8 by 51 makes its way to the civilian market, but at least it will make it be produced. And that is further than a lot of really brilliant ideas ever get. So we'll see. The one thing I wanted to point out about 300 Blackout was twofold. I have asserted before, and I will continue to assert, if it were not for the fact that suppressors were NFA items, I think 300 Blackout would be a much, much more popular cartridge than it is. Because, like, you and I have been very... I think you and I agree, and I've been very vocal about the fact that, like, 300 Blackout Supersonic, to me, makes very little sense. There are other cartridges that do everything you can do with 300 Blackout Supersonic, you can do with another cartridge, too. Like, I was even doing ballistics math, and this is interesting to me, because, like, it shouldn't work out this way. Like, 350 Legend, for anybody that's not familiar, it's basically an attempt to straight wall rifle hunt in straight wall only season with an AR platform. That being said, it is a 358 caliber bullet, 357 caliber bullet in, I believe it's basically a 556 cartridge that's been blown out to that chamber dimension. But if memory serves, I did the ballistics math on what the ballistic coefficient, what the muzzle velocity and what the weight of the bullet was, and I determined that out to about 150 to 200 yards, the 350 Legend has more energy on target than any commercially available 300 Blackout round, because it's a bigger diameter, it's a heavier bullet, and that one simple fact, that and the fact that there's more powder volume and you can push it faster, that meant that out to your short to intermediate ranges, 350 Legend makes a hell of a good argument, not just for a deer hunting round, but for a home defense round. I mean, if you don't need to shoot over 100 yards, that 350 Legend will friggin' knock a door off the hinges faster than a 300 Blackout will. But the one place 300 Blackout always wins is suppressed.
Yeah, suppressed. It's if you've never shot 300 Blackout suppressed with subs, it's giggle quiet.
Yeah,
I say giggle quiet because it makes you giggle, like, because you shoot it and you're like, I can't believe how quiet this is. So I don't know. I'm gonna try to get back into the 300 Blackout game this year. I have the components. I stripped a rifle out when the prices went sky high. I stripped a rifle out to build a different rifle, and so I kind of got pieces, you know, and everything laying around. So I think I might reassemble the old 300 Blackout rifle and start stocking up on some 300 Blackout subs. For the gun community and stuff, I want to see more companies. I want to see more unification. I want to see more companies pushing back against the ATF and the government. I never had a chance to follow up on it, but I was reading one thread that apparently some companies are massively donating to, like, FPC and stuff, like, trying to fight the lawsuits. And so I would like to see more companies do that, even if they're not affected. I would love to see more companies do that. I would love to see companies that don't support that kind of thing, like Daniel Defense and Ruger kind of was got into some hot fire and stuff like that. I would like to see them kind of suffer a little bit. I wouldn't want to see them go out of business, because, I mean, I do want to see them continue to manufacture firearms and not, because if you lose a firearm manufacturer, I really feel like that's a big blow. I feel like it's a blow to the industry, and it's just a step in the wrong direction, as much as that is. But I do want to see just unification. And even though some of these companies have the government contracts like SIG and Daniel Defense and stuff like that, I want them to stand by their product. I want them to stand by their Second Amendment that they surround. The Second Amendment is their company, and I would love for them to actually stand by it and support the citizens for once. We all want money, but it'd be nice to get that support.
And take that one step further down the road. I would really love to see manufacturers take positive action against states that are taking negative action against them. Like, we've had this conversation about, like, Ronnie Barrett and him basically flipping the state of California the middle finger and refusing to service their law enforcement agents' firearms because of actions and laws that were passed in California. And I've said time and time again, can you just imagine how fast some of this would change. If all these manufacturers, these ammo manufacturers, these magazine manufacturers, the middlemen, the retailers, the resellers, the warehouses, everybody top to bottom said, no, we are not, I'm not sending, what's the capacity of Glock 19? I don't know, I'm not a Glock tard.
The Glock 15? 19, it's, what, 15 rounds?
15 yeah. rounds, 16, 9 millimeter.
Yeah, 15 huh? rounds, 16 rounds.
Yeah, I'm not shipping 15 round magazines to New York anymore. Your people can only get X number of rounds. You can only get X number of rounds. Eat it. Deal with it.
Right. Cope. Yeah. Seize. I mean, I would like to see some of that too. Like,
I would love to see it. I think that those manufacturers might lose a couple of bucks in state sales, but I think they'd probably reap the rewards from the community. I think the majority of people would probably look at it and say, well, you know what? Actions have consequences. Get over yourselves. Yeah. I've seen this coming up recently, and it's in the same vein. I don't know how I feel about it. I have slightly mixed feelings. I've seen a lot of pressure being applied to firearms trainers to encourage them to stop training law enforcement officers.
Oh.
And I have mixed feelings. Like, you got to hear me out on this. On the one hand, I'm trapped in this hell of I know law enforcement officers who are genuinely trying to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, there's the goon squad at the FBI and the shitheads at the ATF and all the people with the heart attack gear at the CIA and all the people at the NSA that can turn your webcam at him on and your cell phones when you're not looking. And there's any number of state agencies at any number of states who will happily forget and curb stomp the constitutional rights of their citizens anytime it suits them, any day that ends in Y. And on the one hand, somebody says, well, you shouldn't train those cops. And I'm kind of like, well, of course not. To hell with them. Let give them squirt pistols. Let them go enforce their stupidity with that. And then on the other hand, I'm like, but you know, these cops, they're trying to do the right thing. So I get into this trap of like, I don't want to fall into the ACAB hole.
I mean... I'm fine with if they want to train law enforcement, let them train law enforcement. But what gets me is when they train law enforcement, but they don't train the same stuff to the civilians. I think it should be across the board same. Should a civilian be able to get CQB and learn how to clear the house and all this stuff? Yes. I think they should. Will they be able to take the class as often as law enforcement? Because, law enforcement, a lot of them, they can get, the sponsored, and they can go because the place might buy the class for them or something. I think across the board, it should be fair. If a law enforcement can take breacher classes and stuff like that, I should be able to. I should be able to take, learn how to do some of the stuff, the same thing. Like, it shouldn't be just strictly to law enforcement. And there are some instructors that they will do certain classes, like advanced classes, such as CQB, stuff like that, to just law enforcement. And then they won't teach it. And it's law enforcement only. You cannot, or government agency, whatever. And then you cannot, as a civilian, they won't let you take it, which I don't think that's right. But where they won't let you do it, there's another place that if you research and you make sure that they're a good place, they will do it. So,
and see, since you diverted my train of thought in that direction, first of all, F trainers like that. Across the board, categorically, no exceptions, F them. Second of all, I know there's statistic out there, and I know as soon as I say I don't know what it is, somebody's going to jump my butt in a Signal chat or on Facebook or somewhere else and say, hey, dummy, here's the statistic to prove or disprove what you just said, but I'm going to posit something. I'm going to go out on a limb with all of my podcasting journalistic reputation, which that and $5 gets you a cup of coffee because it ain't worth anything. I would be willing to bet that if we go on the averages, all law enforcement officers in the country at every level and all gun-owning civilians, I would be willing to bet the rate at which people seek training is higher in civilians than it is law enforcement.
Yeah.
And I say that because when we compare the knucklehead that has the J-frame with only 5 bullets in it in his sock drawer to protect him from the bad guy who never goes and gets training his entire life, he's an idiot. And we compare him to a SWAT officer. Yes, SWAT guy gets tons more training every year. However, you and I both know that about 98% of law enforcement officers, the only time they touch their service weapon is to take it out of their holster administratively or to qualify once a year with it. And the ammunition that they shoot downrange at qual is the only ammo they shoot at the gun all year. That's probably 98% of officers. Because the majority of their time is spent filing reports, doing paperwork, picking their nose, and picking their belly button. Not necessarily in that order. So, yes, I agree with you. There is that idea out there that trainers think, well, that doesn't, the civilians don't need to know that. But then I immediately counter with, but the civilians are infinitely more likely to stop a crime in commission than the cops are. And people will fight me on that tooth and nail, and that's okay, I love you, but you're wrong. Because most police officers are not standing there when a crime is committed. They show up afterwards to take a report and clean up the blood. The person who is in the best position to stop the crime from being committed is the person it's being perpetrated upon. So, to all those trainers out there that think, well, I don't need to teach civilians that, you're a moron. I love you, you're wrong, you're a moron. But, so, we're talking about, like, positive action, trainers. I wish like hell. First of all, let me just say that in the last 2 years, with the explosion of first-time gun owners, I've seen tons and tons of people welcomed in the Second Amendment community. I've seen everybody from former progressives to current progressives. I've seen women. I've seen racial minorities. I've seen homosexuals. Everybody's coming screaming to gun ownership, and they are seeking the community, and the community, by far and large, for the most part, is welcoming them with open arms. We are recognizing that people are coming into this with lots of questions, without much knowledge. They're not using the right terms. I don't want to use the words making fools of themselves, but like they are acting a little bit ignorant because they are. They've never even seen a gun before. This is all new to them. And for the most part, the Second Amendment community, the gun owning community, has welcomed them with open arms, trying to get them pointed in the right direction. We're encouraging them to get training. We're encouraging them to invest in good gear because we want to see them successful in being able to defend themselves and become a safe, responsible gun owner. However, there are those people out there that are horribly representing us, who are making us all look like freaking morons, and I would really love to see the gun community slap that person in the back of the head and tell them to sit down and shut up. Seriously. Yeah. Like, I've said it before, no one who has ever bought a firearm legally in this country can be lied to about background checks. No one can be lied to about it because they know they've gone through the process. No one who has ever had to do an NFA transfer can ever be told, oh, just pay your money and quit crying about it, because they know it's 8 to 9 months of the FBI ripping apart your background for what amounts to a freaking muffler on the end of your rifle or your pistol. No one can be lied to about fully semi-automatic once they've actually fired an AR-15, because they know that's not how it works. So the more people we indoctrinate into firearms ownership, the more people we bring into this lifestyle, the more people we teach how to defend themselves, the fewer victims and the fewer morons are out there who can be lied to about gun laws and how guns work, who can be twisted against us. So every last one of them is a positive. Every last one of them is in the green, in the black, good to go. Like, welcome to the community. They won't all be politically active. They will not all be captain, everybody should have rocket launchers and crew serve weapons. They're not all going to be that. A lot of them are going to be like, whoa, 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 Phil. I just bought my first Glock 19. You're going to have to slow down on the giving everybody machine guns. And that's fine. But they are not to be ridiculed, and they are not to be freaking made fun of, and they are not to be shunned, because they took the first step in becoming who we are. And we are not nutcases. We are people that believe that we have a right to defend ourselves and that we have a responsibility to defend ourselves and that we are uniquely able to intercede between violence and our families. And just by them taking the step of, I want to be able to defend myself, they've taken the first step down the road to becoming us. So if we welcome them and if we slap Captain Fudd or whatever title you want to hang on him, the knucklehead who friggin' tries to run people off or make people feel like they're stupid for getting involved in this, like this isn't where you belong. If we slap that person in the back of the head and tell them to mind their freaking business, I think we'd be better off as a community, yeah. Personally.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see the community come together. That would be a nice goal for this year, just because we are so divided. I mean, you can't even post your AR online right now and say, and people, you know, talk, hey, what'd you do? And you say what your parts list were, and they were like, oh, hey, cool, why'd you pick that? And they talk civilly. It's not a Daniel defense, so it's not a good one. It's not SIG, or it's not, I don't know, name your top-of-the-line Gucci, or, you know, it's not a Zev slide or a Zev rifle or something. Like, it just name the top-of-the-line rifle part, and that you'll get torn apart about it, which is ridiculous. I've shot anywhere from Zev rifles to I've shot Anderson Manufacturing, and I have not had issues. Yeah, I've only had issues with one lower my entire life, and that was the very first rifle I bought. It had to be sent back and milled out a little bit more, but other than that, never had issues.
But some of the memes are fire, like the yeah. Olight memes.
Yeah. Well, oh my God. Yeah, I mean Olight, if you want to own Olight, do it, but just be prepared for your like freaking pocket to explode one of these days. I mean, and that being said, I have almost caught myself on fire with my Surefire because I bumped it on and not realized it. And I've melted a pair of my pants, and I've melted my pullover for work. I've melted a little hole in the side of it because I bumped it, wasn't really paying attention. And I'm like, what is burning? This is stupid. And then someone's like, hey, your light's on. I look and I'm like, oh, and that's 1,000 lumens directed. So
if you turn this thing on and leave it on in your pocket for a little bit, you learn really fast that yes, LEDs are wonderfully cool, efficient little gems of the 21st century. And for the amount of light they throw out, they are incredibly efficient, which means they don't make a whole ton of heat. However, sir, you can't make 1,000 lumens without some kind of heat. It's not possible.
I did just see, actually, Streamlight just posted their new flashlight, the ProTac 2.0, which I'm kind of excited about.
Really?
Yeah, ProTac 2.0, 2,000 lumens.
Oh, my God. Now, see, okay, since you're diverting me, like, this is a ProTac 1L, uh-huh. And as a matter of fact, this my wife got one just like this as a stocking stuffer for Christmas.
Santa, geez.
My daughter got her first pocket knife.
Nice.
So, you know. But anyway, the reason I got this was, A, my wife asked me to use this every single camp trip we go on. And frequently. Because, like, I don't think she carries her every day, but this stays in my back pocket all the time. If you can't tell from the amount of black anodizing that is worn off of it,
mm-hmm.
This is well loved.
Yeah.
But this is only 300 lumens on full power.
Right.
And I'm actually pretty content with that. 80 lumens on low power and 300 on full power, mostly because this is mostly used for utility use. And even though when you're trying to burn the night away in a self-defense situation, there is no such thing as too many lumens. When you are trying to find something on the floor of your car in a freaking dark truck, there is every bit too much lumens. There is absolutely such thing as too much lumens. So, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, 2,000 lumens from something in this form factor that runs off a single CR123, that is insanity to me.
Yeah, I have the Stiletto, the Pro from Surefire. That's what I've been running, and I love it. It's one of the best flashlights I've ever owned. And but yeah, Streamlight, I run the Streamlight ProTac on my shotgun and my rifle, and I like it. It's a great... great light output, great beam, stuff like that. Like, I love it. And so I might be getting another one. The 2.0 we'll see what happens. I might get the 2.0, check it out. But no, but 2,000 lumens, that's crazy. That's bright. I'd be kind of curious to see the specs on it as far as like the candela and all that stuff. So
I got something else for you. Yeah. Something I would love. I'd love to see the gun community as a whole, not just manufacturers, do this. I would love to see. I know as soon as I say this, you or somebody else is going to point out the fact that some manufacturer makes this, but I would love to see more manufacturers offering at least compact, if not full size, single stack 9mm, which sounds like a weird combination, especially seeing how like they used to make a lot of them and they stopped. Everything now is a double stack, but
Glock like, still makes one.
Single stack 9mm full size.
Oh, full size. They make compact. I mean, I was gonna say Smith and Wesson makes compact. And
now the reason I say that is because like one of the first handguns I learned to shoot on was a Smith and Wesson Model 39. So I believe it's either steel aluminum frame. Think of it like an 80% scale 1911 as far as size. Mm-hmm. Single stack 9mm had very, very reasonably sized grips for a person with smaller hands and 9mm lock breech, very gentle shooting. Smith & Wesson's of that vintage being like, you know, late 70s, early 80s, up to about the early 90s when the 39 and the 59 and the 5906 and all those stopped production. But like those were some of the best out of the box factory triggers handguns ever saw. Like Smith and Wesson hand fit those guns together and it showed. They are beautiful. I have told my dad on several occasions that I would love to see that handgun in the will. Like, wouldn't be upset if it went to somebody else, but like that is my dad's gun and I have an emotional connection to it. But I would absolutely love to see manufacturers get back to making that, because I don't think it would be an enormous part of their market, to be honest. Anybody that's shopping full-size 9mm is going to want a double stack. Mm-hmm. But I see, especially as more and more people come into the gun community, and we see more and more women coming into the gun community who stereotypically, unless you have an Adam's apple and a 5 o'clock shadow, women tend to have smaller hands than men. And I know that single stacked frame would be easier to get their hands around. And I know that lock breech 9mm would make for an incredibly soft shooting firearm. And I am not a proponent of a person carrying a subcompact gun for anything other than concealed carry. Like, I've always said that if you're going to have a home defense gun, especially a first-time gun owner, it should be a full-size gun. It should be Glock 17, CZ 75. It should be a full-size gun. It should be something that has the longest sight radius, the longest barrel, the most magazine capacity. It should be all those things. But I see this hole in handgun offerings that can cater to this part of the market that is growing more every year. And it is a full-size single-stack 9mm. You can get full-size. I mean, hell, you can get a single-stack 45 caliber 1911 that's easier to get your hands around than a Glock 19 is. So, like, I'm not just puffing smoke. Like, this idea of having a single-stack frame, it does make for a bit more svelte firearm that would fit certain people's hands better. Unfortunately, the last time I looked around, I think I only found, in terms of new production, I think only Taurus makes, like, a single-stack 9mm in a full-size frame, which I'd rather have a pointy stick.
Yeah, I don't think the market's there anymore for them to do that. But
here's the thing. Is the market coming with the advent of more and more women joining firearms ownership? I guess that's why I'm saying, like, I agree with you. The market wasn't there. Once the plastic Wonder 9s dominated the market, single stack, like, metal frame 9mm were out of the question for a lot of years. It's only been more recently that, Smith & Wesson has been making metal framed M&Ps? Because somehow there's demand for that? I mean,
yeah, I mean, and then you got the Staccato, and you got, you know, the 2011s now that are double stacked that are pretty expensive, and I've never heard really anything negative about them. No, I don't know. I mean, would it be cool if some of those came back? Yeah, I think. But just there's so much out there. There's so many firearms out there, especially for women, that are double stack and easy to handle and more mag capacity than a single stack. That I think that's the thing is, like, if I'm looking at a gun now, I mean, a lot of times I'm looking at the mag capacity. There's reasons why I've stuck with the M&P, the M&P line with the double stack mags. Like, one, it's nice because I can go across the M&P line I have. You know, you can swap mags out as long as, you know, the full size mag will fit down to the smaller pistol. You know, it won't go vice versa, of course, but I can throw a 17 round mag into the small subcompact M&P two or the M&P that I have, and call it good. But and have 17 rounds. But as soon as you downsize to the single stack like the Shield, you know, you're down to a limited amount of rounds. Which, hey, if you want to carry that, more power to you. I would carry more mags on me is all. If I'm carrying something with smaller capacity, so. But I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see, and it's not a bad thing. I mean, especially if you're training somebody or if you're wanting to introduce somebody into a gun. That's why I bought a 22 revolver, and that's why I'll probably buy it. You know, I'm going to get a 22 pistol semi-auto, just because if it's a man or a woman or whatever, a kid, introducing them to a gun and then making it so that they don't have to fight that kick, as they get older and they get stronger and they get recognize and they can actually learn how to control that recoil, then move them up. But having a gun in your collection to help somebody introduce them to guns, I think that's major. I think
you reminded me because we were talking about introducing people to guns. You know what this is, right?
The Blackbeard, duh.
Manus Blackbeard X.
Yeah.
So the secret sauce of the Blackbeard system is that you stick it into your AR and it automatically resets your trigger every time you fire it. Manus, guys, y'all are rocket surgeons, and I know y'all can figure this out. Y'all have got to find a way to take this concept and shove this into more rifle platforms and popular handgun platforms. If you decide you need somebody to test CZs, your boy's got you covered. Like, call me. But, like, it is such a great concept. And I get why they went with AR-15. The market share is there. But I can just see the ability to, like, knock the slide off of your Glock or knock the slide off your M&P and replace it with a Blackbeard slide and have the same ability to reset your trigger every shot. And then take what we currently have and in Blackbeard and move that to other platforms. Because, like, this is too good of a concept to keep chained ARs forever. It just is. Like, and for anybody that hasn't played with it before, call your boy. I'll nerd you out about it. But, like, Blackbeard X, the ability to chain together Blackbeard automatically resetting your trigger, and then Manus X, where you get all the feedback and all of the friggin' transition data and all the shot data and the drills, those two things together in the AR platform, like, not to make a cartoon out of it, but, like, it turns dry firing your AR-15 into a video game. It is fun. It's entertaining, and it makes you want to train, and it gives you a reason to do it, and it you show improvement in your shooting very quickly. So I would hope that Manus could figure out how to take that general concept and apply it to other platforms. I mean, I know that, like, with Glock, you have, the dry fire mag or whatever it's called. I don't know if you can apply the same methodology to all these other platforms, especially not hammer fired. But I wonder how hard it would be for Manus to just make a slide replacement where you strip off the slide and the barrel off of your handgun, you put on their attached, you know, you put on their slide, and all you need is some way inside the machinery of the slide to reset the trigger. And it seems like that should be possible via resetting an action bar or interfacing with something in the fire control group in the back of the grip. It seems like it should be possible. I'm sure they're pretty smart guys and they're already thinking about it. I would just love to see that happen, because I think if you could take what Blackbeard has done in the AR realm and you could push that to other platforms, I think Manus would completely eat the market segment as far as dry fire training. They're already eating the market with what they've produced, and they would just, I mean, there'd be no point in anybody else even playing in the sandbox farms, as far as I'm concerned, because Manus has them beat. Mm-hmm. I just wish it was available on more platforms.
Well, let's reach out to the guy we know at Manus, and we need to see if he wants to come on and talk.
Look, if one of them hasn't already thought this up, he needs to give me a job. But I'm pretty sure they've already had this come to this conclusion.
No, I'm just saying to get him on, and just it'd be fun to have him on anyway. But yeah, no. So that's I mean, that's our expectations, or our wishes for 2023 from the gun community. I'd be kind of curious. Hit us up, comment below. This is not a live show, so if you are commenting, we should probably have led with that. But once this comes out, the recording and stuff, comment on it. I mean, I'm curious to see what people are wanting to see from the gun community. What are people wanting to see from manufacturers? What have you seen that you're excited about? Stuff like that. So.
Yeah, and I mean, what do you want to see from your influencers, your content creators, your trainers, from the every person gun owner, from the FUD range officer? I mean, we're all in the community, whether we want everybody to be in the community, but we're all in the community one way or the other. But, like, I always want the gun owning community to go in a positive direction. We will disagree sometimes what positive really looks like, but, like, I grew up with the idea that owning firearms and knowing how to use them was a responsibility of every adult. It was your responsibility to know how to defend yourself, know how to defend your family, and it was not an optional experience in my household. Like, you are going to learn a minimum amount of knowledge on how to do this. And then obviously I took that minimum and kind of ran off with it. And I'm in turn teaching my daughter. She has to learn the minimum. She didn't have to be the gun nerd, but she's got to at least learn the bare minimums. But I want more people to have that experience. I know in my generation, I'm like the oldest millennial. I just turned 40. I know that a lot of people grew up never having touched a firearm until, like, they played Call of Duty as a teenager, and then they turned 21 and went out to go buy the gun they saw in Call of Duty. More power to you. But I want to see more people join this community, and I want to see more young people be introduced to this, and I want to see them welcomed, and I want to see them excited about joining and being a part of it and spreading what they know. And I want to see this continue to grow. It has to grow, because if the median age of gun ownership continues to go up, we're losing, because that means we're not bringing in that next generation, and we will suffer the consequences of that. But Matter of Facts podcast heading out the door. If you're in SHOT Show, I'll give you the safety brief now. Don't add to the population. Don't subtract from the population. Don't end up in jail or in the hospital. And if you go to jail, establish dominance quickly. Good night, y'all.
Yep.